Okay. So with that in mind, brothers and sisters, I want to welcome you to this week's Black Wallets Town Hall meeting. In case you don't know, my name is Brother Lou, and I will be the host this evening. If this is your first time calling in, I just want to run down a few of the ground rules to let you know how we manage these calls. They usually last for about 2 hours, so that's about 11 o'clock our time, Eastern time. And if we have a really good one, we will extend it. And if no one feels like talking, then we will cut it short. So let me just say in advance, we appreciate you coming to hang out with us tonight. I hope you're feeling inspired and empowered because you are now on a platform with a group of like-minded brothers and sisters who have come together for the purposes of discussing solutions to many of the problems we face in our community in an intelligent and an organized manner. So if you remember when you called in, I addressed you as either brother or sister, and the reason we address one another as such is to show you respect and as a sign of solidarity. During these calls, we don't like to discuss religion, we do not like to discuss the black male and female dynamic, and we do not discuss political party affiliation. We can discuss politics as it relates to black people in America and how we can use it to improve our situation, but we don't want to get into a discussion about which party did this and which party didn't do that. The reason we don't discuss these topics is because they are all opinion-based, which means no one is right and no one is wrong, and we'll be here all night going around and around in circles arguing. We want to be productive. So for all the guests on the call, let me just tell you a little bit about this organization. If you haven't watched the blueprint yet, Black Wallets Matter is a member association comprised of brothers and sisters that believe the only way we're going to fix the problems in the black community is if we do it ourselves and if we start using the power of the black dollars we already have. It's estimated we spent $1.3 trillion last year, so if we were to pool those resources and practice group economics, we could have a major financial impact and transform our community. This is a form of black capitalism. No matter how you may feel about the system, it's the only one we have here in America. Any radical ideas about operating outside of that system will just be a waste of precious time and resources. So the best thing for us to do is to learn the rules of the game and get really good at playing it. And that's the purpose of Black Wallets Matter Member Association. We want to bring together like-minded brothers and sisters who are sick and tired of the sad state of affairs in the black community and are motivated to take action. We want brothers and sisters who believe the first step to solving our problems is unity and investing in ourselves and our people. You see, what we have here is a systematic problem. And when you have the oppression and racism and injustices that we face, what we need is a systematic solution. And so that's why nothing else has worked for us before. We've never really taken the time to build a system to counterbalance the oppression and the injustices we face. Building this system, the type of system that I'm talking about, will require patience, and there are a lot of things we don't know how to do. So, for instance, organizing, cooperating with one another is not something that many of us are accustomed to doing, and so it will take time to learn how to do that. But with the support of a few intrepid brothers and sisters and a well-thought-out plan, we can at least get headed in the right direction, and we can succeed. So if you watch the web, if you look on the website, the blueprint video, that is our plan. Those are our marching orders. It provides a structure for how to build a system that will counterbalance the injustices we face using the resources that we currently have. The idea, the blueprint, it may not be perfect, but like I said, it's a great place for us to start. And for those of us who are sick and tired of sitting around talking about what we could have and should have do, you know, it gives us, you know, a firm direction. So I want to tell everyone on this call tonight, if you are a person that is sick and tired of being sick and tired and you've had enough, then this may be the organization for you. Because if you're, about taking self-responsibility and accountability, even though we aren't the ones that cause the conditions that we suffer from, then this is where we want to get started. We don't want to make any more excuses. We don't want to sit around acting like these things don't bother us anymore. Personally, it makes me uncomfortable. Like the brother said earlier, you know, we've been targeted by the government. There have been things put in place. Drugs have been flooded into our neighborhood. have broken up our homes, broken up family, have broken up our community vibe, and that sense of it taking a village to raise children. These things were all done strategically to throw us off kilter. This is where we currently stand. We are dysfunctional and disorganized, and we need to start clawing our way back. We have examples in the Jewish community, in the LGBT community, in the Latino community. These are people, they're not suffering. They weren't suffered the type of oppression that we suffered, but they have come to this country Mainstream America has targeted them, and yet they have prospered despite being targeted. And so that's exactly what we need to do. There is a huge opportunity in history for us to get it together right now, because with this president that we have, this country is completely fighting amongst itself. It's in total disarray. We have millennials who are one way. We have, you know, Generation X, that's another, and then the baby boomers that are yet another way. Those are three distinct mentalities, and you see the conflict at action here in the country. We want to put those differences aside. We want to embrace everyone that looks like us, and we want to understand. We want to talk to people that know that we're suffering and say, hey, listen, it is time for us to find solutions. So just let me be clear. The overall goal of this organization is to realistically change the economic, political, and social conditions of our people here in America and abroad. It may take a generation or two to achieve this goal. It will require a sacrifice from those of us to do for those of us who can't. And we have to be, like I said, we have to become the quote unquote elders. That is, we have to blaze the trail for the future generations of black people and make sure that they don't suffer the same types of conditions and dysfunction that we're suffering from today. They need to have it better than us. So we have to put certain protections in place for them now, and that includes wealth and political influence. So, like I said, if you're sick and tired of this condition and you're willing to set aside your differences and unite with your brothers and sisters, regardless of religious or political beliefs, and focus on the goal of building a black economy so we can have the money to solve our problems, then we want you to join us, or we would like to work with you. Like I said, other ethnic groups, other ethnic and social groups, they have proven that this model works. So we need to model them. It's not that we're copying them, and it's not like we're, you know, not innovative on our own. We're just looking at things that actually work and using that to our benefit. So if you want to wonder, so if you want to, you know what a group of like-minded brothers and sisters can do, if we were to band together, you know, and withhold our black dollars from certain businesses that, you know, don't have our best interests in mind, and we boycotted them, we could kill one of those brands. We could kill one of these big American industries. We could dominate one of these big industries because we are the largest consumers in the country. That $1.3 trillion is a lot of money. If you look at the hair care industry that's dominated by the Koreans or the Asians or whoever, we pretty much about 90% of that multi-billion dollar industry. And if we would just wake up and realize the power in our black wallets, we could pretty much own that. Okay, cool. So they own the products and the distribution. But if we have the money, we are the gas, the fuel that makes that system go. And we really need to realize that and start acting as a collective. And we have to communicate that to a lot of our brothers and sisters, and that is a severe challenge because you say, okay, let's all boycott, let's all do this, but then we don't have alternatives, and people don't want to sacrifice anymore. So what we have to do is figure out a way for our brothers and sisters to work for their own benefit without even realizing it. We have to create this system where, just the same way as our oppressors have this system that works against us, and You know, we it's just like on autopilot. Everything we do, from paying our taxes to putting gas in our cars to taking our kids out to eat, all of that money gets funneled back to a government and to people and powers that be that do not have our best interests in mind. And even in our communities and our neighborhoods, when we patronize these corner stores with the Arabs and go to these beauty supply stores with the Asians, that's all money being sucked out of our communities. And I never remember getting the memo from Arabs or Asians saying, hey, can we set up shop in your community? I never remember that. I never remember hearing on the news there was some big meeting where they all decided to get together and take advantage of the black community. These people they just all move in unison. They just move on code. And we need to develop our own code. Our own code needs to be self-preservation, us first. That's what the code needs to be. If any one of us, if our lives were in danger, self-preservation would kick in immediately. I don't understand why it's not freaking getting through to everybody else. Because we see we're slowly just going straight to the bottom of the socioeconomic pole, the totem pole. And the people at the bottom rung, they have no rights, they have no power, they have nothing. And those who are oppressing us are not making the distinction between if you're a Muslim, if you're a Christian, if you're whatever it is that you into, whatever you believe. If you have your skin color has some degree of pigmentation, they're lumping you in with us. They're lumping you in, and they're doing something against you. So you need to fortify yourself and protect yourself. And if you look at, Africans come to this country, they are able to succeed. I think they're doing better than the Asians right now. And they have, most of them have a darker skin complexion than most of us. So we can't use the skin as an excuse anymore. We just can't. And it doesn't, we can't use arrogance, we can't use anything. We can't say because we're descendants of slaves. None of those excuses matter, because the bottom line is when they start, I don't know, I'm not going to say they're going to start rounding us up. I'm not going to be dramatic like that. But less opportunities are made available for our children. When there are less opportunities available for our children, we are going to, our whole existence will be jeopardized. Because look at the opportunities we have now, and we aren't utilizing them effectively. So it's just going to be less. What happens when these opportunities are presented and we don't take advantage of them, whoever put them there, they take them back. They take them back. And then when someone says, okay, cool, you know what, I'm looking for this particular opportunity, I'm looking to take advantage of something, I need some help, then the help is no longer available. We got to start focusing on what's important. If you're on this call, that means you jumped through some hoops. That means you looked at something we had on Facebook. You read the post. You clicked the link. You went through a survey. You've been on it. You got an email. I probably sent you about 20 emails by now. You jumped through hoops to get on this call. That means you care. That means you look around your community, you look around the collective community, and you're like, this ain't right. And so if it's not right, so then we have to start doing something. It's going to be a small group of us who have their eyes wide open. That's what it is. It's going to be a very, very small group of us with their eyes wide open. And what we need to do is start getting to work, rolling up our sleeves and getting to work, solving the problems of poverty, right? We're not going to totally eradicate poverty, but if we can start creating jobs or providing opportunities for our brothers and sisters, that's less men and women turning towards crime and whatever else brings us down collectively. If we start fostering and really, really working towards learning entrepreneurship and learning and supporting our businesses and things like that, now we have places that can provide employment, and then we also have role models in the community. Because a lot of the things that we do, a lot of the dysfunction we suffer from is because we no longer have those upstanding men and women in our community to look up to show us the way. When crack hit our community, it ravaged that. I was talking to somebody the other day, and I said, I remember It didn't matter if we were outside playing skelly or whatever we were doing as little men, I mean, as young boys. When an older lady walked by pushing her shopping cart, we would all jump to either grab the bags, walk her up to, you know, her apartment or whatever it is, or move out of her way and give her a wide berth. That level of respect is gone out of our community. And the only way it's going to be reinstilled is if somebody moves first. I think most of us are sitting around waiting to see who's going to do what. And actually, I know that's true. That's what compelled me to even, like, start even thinking of Black Wallets Matter, because there was so much stuff going on, and for so long, I was sitting back like, when somebody's going to do something? Who's going to do something? And then it was like, why not you? Like, what are you waiting for? You're Black too. So then I was like, well, you know, can't do it by yourself. Let me go find some other people who want to help me, who can help me. Let's find other brothers and sisters with different skill sets and different ways of life. Find out what's going on with them and then say, hey, brother, hey, sister, what's going on? Hey, how can we solve this particular problem? Hey, people have come up with some pretty good ideas since this organization has been operating. This organization has evolved, and it will continue to evolve. And we're taking lumps along the way. We're having growing pain, but we're really, really getting to understand where the areas that we need to work on. So we have big problems out there. But to start off, one of the biggest problems we're going to have is just organizing and working together. Organizing and working together in a way that doesn't really require us all blindly following a leader. That has been to our detriment in the past. It doesn't work. We don't need a leader that's standing up there and telling everybody what to do, because what happens when that leader is targeted and he's no longer there? Then the whole mission, the whole operation falls apart. What we need is the system where everyone is on code, the system where everyone knows what they should be doing, like a beehive. Everyone knows their part. Everyone knows what they should be doing. If that means that we have to start off with everyone building wealth or prioritizing wealth in their home, then so be it. This organization was initially created with the idea that we be selfless, that we give to try to help the collective. But if you don't have your household in order, I'm realizing if you don't have your household in order, then you're not even worried about what's going on outside your door. And we can't fault you. We can't be mad at you. So we want to help you do that as well. If you have to start prioritizing, the thing is, don't be like other Black businesses. People think that we just need more Black businesses right off the bat. No, we only need more black businesses under a certain condition. And that condition is that those businesses agree to either recontribute to the communities that support them. Otherwise, they're going to get the money, and then they're going to leave out of the neighborhood. They're going to get the money, they're going to buy the fancy car, the fancy house, and then when the people in the community come and patronize that business, they're going to take it and leave out of the community. And even if they decide to spend their money in the community, think about it. There are very few other Black businesses to support anyway. I have a Black business. I have two Black businesses right across the street from each other. If I do not go to them, if I want something from the corner store, I got to go and give my money to the Arab. Or if I want something, you know, we need supplies for the shop or whatever, we got to go get that from an Asian person. If we go to the supermarket, I think Indian people own that now. So even if I want to spend my money back in the community, I don't have that many options. I can't buy a car I could buy a car from a Black person, but let's say if I wanted to buy a brand new one, chances are the dealership that I would go to is not going to be owned by a Black person. When the mortgage on my home is not originated it's not a Black bank. A Black bank doesn't hold the mortgage. My landlord for one of my places is black, so yeah, that works out. But come on, that's just a small little drop in the bucket. So I say all of that to say that America fully understands economics, and if we do not wise up and start showing them that we understand how the game is played too, they're going to continue to roll over us. They're rolling over middle America right now. We have. If we don't start fortifying ourselves, we're going to get steamrolled. I have, like, no idea. I've shuddered to think about what it would look like with, like, total economic annihilation. I just can't even my brain won't even go that far. But it's pretty bad now. Because in this day and age, we still have men and women who are, barely surviving in the richest country in America. And yeah, you have white homeless people and all of that stuff, but I mean, you have people who are for generations living at that level of poverty. Like, that is just a way of life for their people or for their family. And that's sickening. That's sickening. Especially with how much money all of us waste going to clubs and bars and, you know, all the other kinds of stuff on fast food and whatever else we throw away our money on. We don't have a culture of investing. And I'm not knocking anybody because we don't have people teaching us that. But if we want that, if we want to prioritize education and investing and all those other things that make a people strong, we're going to have to invest in it because we don't have it now. We can't rely on the white man to teach us our history in their schools. That doesn't even make sense. We can't say they figured out a system where they collect property taxes from everybody and then use that to create these free schools. Well, actually, that's not how the schools came about, but I don't want to get into all of that. But they have the free schools and they're using the collective tax money to support them. They're going to teach whatever they want to teach. If you look at the Jewish community, they live in a community, but they school their kids in their own schools. If you even Muslims, they the things that they want to teach their children, they teach them that at home. They teach them the culture. They teach them to be pious and they teach them to be respectful and all these other different things. Those are the things we need to be. Our children need to be taught these things collectively. It just needs to be the way of life. The way this organization, the way that we think that we're really, really going to create change, like I said, we're realistically planning. The way we think we're going to do this is if we focus on the babies. We have to get to them, and we have to provide these educational, cultural, and even occupational advantages. We have to give them this type of education at a young age. And we need to do it in every place, every black community that needs it. That is going to take billions of dollars, billions. And it's money that we're just going to have to invest. Now, we're not going to generate, we actually have the billions of dollars, but we know our brothers and sisters aren't going to do that. They're not going to just give up the money benevolently and just say that they need something in exchange for making that type of investment. This is what this organization wants to do. So the only way that I know to get that type of money and have it on a consistent basis is if we engage in business, right? And we need large-scale businesses. We need to be in manufacturing. We had a brother the other night. He said we need to pick an industry and then just say, come hell or high water, we want to dominate it. So it needs to be an industry. So, I mean, like the hair care industry would be perfect. But, I mean, I don't know. But we need to pick an industry and say that we're going to focus on it and we're going to dominate it. But what we need is the investment capital to get there, to get a foothold into that industry so that we can learn the game. Our members have been talking about supermarkets. We've been talking about, the hair care industry. We've been talking about transportation industry. We've been talking about all these various industries that we can get a foothold in. And then once we get big enough, now we can go and we can take it and try to grow it across the country so that we can support these community resource centers. our men and women need to, like, so the parent of these babies, right? They need to be able to provide for the child when the child comes home. One of the striking things that I've observed in our community, the youth, the children that go to school, they no longer have respect for the teacher. They're like wildly out of control. And that's because they aren't receiving the type of discipline that you and I probably had in our day. To when you go out there, you better not embarrass me. You go to school, you go to school to learn. When I was in school, if I act up in class, happened to my brother's class. My mother came to school and beat us in front of the class, slapped me all up in front of the class. And I thought I was tough. And that straightened me right on out. That was the type of time, that was when your parents cared. That's, you know, I went home, parents, you know, check homework, do all of this stuff. That's not going on anymore. But what we have to do is we have to help those parents again. The best way we can help them is providing occupational opportunities. Maybe the father or even the mother, help them learn how to drive a truck or something. Learn how to work with their hands, how to make some money with their hands. Learn welding or electricity or plumbing or one of these other skills where they are able to get up and go out there and earn a living with their hands so that they can provide a loving and a nurturing environment for that child. The vast majority of our people are at poverty. Poverty, black poverty affects 70% of single black mothers. What kind of boys or what kind of children do you think those women are going to raise? It's very, very few productive young men and women are going to come out of that environment. When the father's not in the home, the child doesn't get the balance. They don't get the discipline, the firm hand that the father can provide and the loving and the nurturing that the mother can provide. So you either got a mother or a father that has to do both jobs, and that's not natural. And who knows what kind of problems that child might grow up with in terms of how they view the world and especially how they view black folks. The other thing that we want to address is the racially motivated police brutality. This is, the cops just think it's open season on it. Chilling on armed men and women, no fair repercussions. They're not doing that to anyone else. And that's because people are organized, and that's because people have their politics, and they have their politics and their lawyers in pocket. And we don't. We need to start paying attention to what other people are doing. We need to start investing in lawyers and lobbyists. That is the way the game is played. Do you know what we do? We sit back and we are waiting for someone to do it for us. The NAACP is our most prominent black organization that's involved with the politics and things like that. They have only spent $300,000, you know, I believe it was last year or 2015 or whatever. They've only spent $300,000 on lobbyists. Compare that to one Jewish organization that I looked up. They spend $3 million. That's just one LGBTQ organization spends $1 million. So you got 3 and 10 times more money being spent by communities that are smaller than us. And they wield much more power and much more protection. You don't see the correlation? They're playing the game the right way. I think the reason we don't do some of these things, well, is another problem that we have. So we don't trust one another. So it's like, okay, well, now we know we're supposed to put the money in the lawyers and the lobbyists, but who's going to do it? Who do we give the money to? How does it get done and all of that stuff? That's why we have to create this organization at the grassroots level where everyone is intimate, where we're sitting here, where we're talking. The people who come part of this organization, we are asking them to come on board as founding members. The vast majority of the people who come on these calls, they have my direct number. We talk about it. We talk about the path and the growth of this organization, how it's growing, what new rules and, you know, how we need to implement things. When you come on board, you are actually creating a vehicle. This is a vehicle of change. And you have the support. You have people behind you you know, other than yourself that can move the ball. And those are the things that we eventually want to get to. We want to become the organization that brothers and sisters who say they're sick and tired of being sick and tired, they can turn to us, they can contribute, they can become part of this organization, become a member, and know that things are going to get done. But we have to build it. We are in the building phase right now. And so what we are asking anyone on the call that is not yet a member, who's a guest, this is your first time, if you like anything that you have heard thus far, we want to invite you to become a founding member. The memberships range from $10 at the silver level, $10 a month, $25 at the gold level, and $50 at the platinum level. That is a monthly membership. It comes out every 32 days. So it gives you enough time to get to the next month. If, you know, you don't want to sign up as a member, or you want to make your payments in the time that works for you, there is a link on the website that says make a one-time contribution. You can make a payment, make a contribution, there, if you just want to support us, help us to reach our financial goals. What this organization is doing is we are looking for 2,000 intrepid men and women who want to create change. You can start with us on the national level, or if you want to roll up your sleeve and be active in your community as a representative of Black Wallets Matter, as a member of Black Wallets Matter, then you can do that as well. We have we have some guidelines. We call it the ambassadorship program. We have guidelines where you can get together with a group of like-minded brothers and sisters in your community and then start creating change where you are. In terms of how the money is being managed, in terms of us collecting the membership dues, we provide full financial transparency. So when you become a member, you're able to look at, you're able to go in, look at exactly where the money is coming in, where the money is going out, and where we currently stand in regard, as a group. What we want to do overall, so we're looking for 2,000 founding members, but what our overall goal is within the next 5 years or so, we want to have 1 million members, right? We want to raise the visibility of this organization. We had 1 million members paying, the average between the 10, the 25, and the 50 is $28. If we had 1 million members, we would have $28 million a year coming into this organization. Multiply that by 12, that's $336 million. We could get a $1 or $2 billion loan, and we could absolutely buy up a whole supermarket chain. We could buy up a whole, transportation company for the Eastern Seaboard or whatever. So the things that I'm talking about are not a pipe dream. We can't do it. Even with $336 million, right? So sometimes, we have these discussions and we start talking about business. And they say, well, how would we do this and how would we do this? I want to just give you an example of something that we could do. This is on a smaller level. We don't even need 1 million members for this. If we had, let's say, 10,000 members, right? 10,000 members paying 10 bucks or whatever it is, right? And then we say, you know what? We're going to start taking back our corner stores. We could either go and approach these Arab store owners and be like, listen, man, you want to sell your business to us? If they say no, we can open up a business right across the street from them, open up a store right across the street from them, even if that meant we had to construct the building. We could build the store right across the street from them. We could put things, the prices are sky high in the hood. We can put the stuff at suburban prices or even at cost and subsidize those losses with the membership until we put that guy out of business. We could learn the game. Then when we go and we approach the next store owner, the word would spread amongst them that, hey, listen, they're not playing. The other thing that we could do, because we know we need these corner stores, these general stores or whatever, bodegas, we could learn how that game works. We could create something like a 7-Eleven of our own, and we have the money to subsidize the operational losses. from the membership fees to learn the game. We learn the game. We put it in a manual. We set it up, and now it becomes a franchise. Now you know what we do? We're able to offer men and women, black men and women, hey, listen, this is a business opportunity for you. This is how you run a general store. I don't know when we lost that. When I was growing up, the stores in my neighborhood, they were all my father, my grandfather, and my uncle. They all had stores. They were owned by black people. I don't know how we lost that. But we could bring that back. Everything is so expensive now. So it's going to require an investment. We can take back the mechanic shops. We can take back, anything that are in our neighborhoods that are not owned by us, we can take those back. And the beauty of it, we take them back, and then we go and we open up a community resource center. And that community, they're going to go and still buy their cigarettes and their beer and their cereal and whatever else is going to buy. They're going to buy their pizza and their chicken wings and whatever else it is that they buy, their liquor, whatever. And we're able to take a portion of that and use it to fund a community resource center, in that neighborhood. So now that neighborhood is doing the things, the people in that neighborhood, they're doing the things that they've always been doing. They're spending money the same exact way they've been spending it, but now it's helping them. And you know who it's helping? It's helping those babies. So the activities that the adults are doing is actually going down. They're actually helping. They're actually building a legacy, and they don't even know it. They don't even know it. We know it. It's going to take a few of us that can see that vision. It's going to take a few of us who can get behind an idea like that, because that's what the Asians and the Arabs, that's what they did to us. They just came in our neighborhoods and start sucking the money out. They didn't make a big announcement. They just handled their business. We don't have the startup money to sustain those types of losses that they have. So we have to, one individual. Right, one individual doesn't have that money, but collectively we do. It's $10, it's $25, it's negligible, it's small. What we need to do is change one neighborhood. Then we'll figure out all the problems, all the kinks, and then now we can roll it out. And then you know what happens? If none of us get to see the total transformation in America, it will wind up being the same way like how it is with the Arabs and the Asians. It will just be self-perpetuating. And the next thing you know, people will just wake up one day and be like, wait a minute, when do all these black folks start owning all these businesses again? When did all these young black kids start going to school? What happened to the crime? What happened to this? Why the rap videos? Why the rappers can't make no money with that ignorance no more? They'll wonder what happened, and it'll be a slow transition. They'll be like, why are they so sharp? Why are they so respectful? Why are they so disciplined? We keep throwing all these things in the hood. We keep targeting them with the guns and the drugs and all this, and then they're just not engaging with it anymore. What happened? Because they were babies, and they were taught right and wrong at the beginning. We have to take care of the whole community, all of those babies. We have to take care of all of them. We have to give every single one of them a shot, whether we gave birth to them, whether we had a hand in creating them or not. Because they target our community and took the fathers away from the babies on a massive scale. So we got to go back and parent them kids on a massive scale. That will have to be the investment we make in our future. I can't think of a better investment to make. I can't think of a better place to put my money. I can't think of a better cause. I can't think of something else that would happen when my last days come. I can lay in my box with a smile on my face, knowing that I was selfless, knowing that I did something for my family and for someone else's family. I don't need to get anything back. It's in us. This is why we're so jacked. This is how all these other people take advantage of us. We have big hearts. We're giving people. We're loving people. For us not to do that is unnatural. We come from a place where it was sun, it was open, and nature, God, or whoever you believe in provided for us abundantly. And you know what we did? The strong would go out and they would hunt. The women would sit there and prepare the home, and the whole community ate from the hunt and ate from whatever the woman prepared. It wasn't no my. It was ours. Everybody got in where they fit in. Right now, we're undermanned and we're underskilled. And so those of us who don't have the skills or the man or the physical power to do the things that we need within our community, then you have to get in where you fit in. And if that means you just have to pay $10 a month, then so be it. If you have experience with organizing and leading men and women and putting together training programs and all of the different things that our people need, well, then you step up and start helping us build some of these things. Don't have your skills and your talent going away saying, oh, well, if I ain't getting paid for it, then I ain't doing it. That makes no sense. That makes no sense. So what I want to say to you is that we are looking for 2,000 intrepid men and women who want to get behind an organization that is prioritizing our people come hell or high water. That's what I want. That's what we are asking you today, if you are not yet a member. And then we have a lot of new people on this call today. If this idea does not resonate with you, then this is not, this particular facet of Black Wallets Matter is not for you. If you read the email that I just sent out to many, so we will be launching the Black Wall Street Project in the beginning of the new year. The Black Wall Street Project, it's a comprehensive financial wealth building training program to help you go from where you are now to where you need to be to build up the resources in your household or whatever it is, to give you a good idea of, you know, or at least some blueprint for financial money management and business building and things like that. That may be the avenue for you, and we are not knocking you for it. But this particular fashion of this particular facet of the organization, we are the men and women who are trying to build this counterbalancing machine because we are sick and tired of being sick and tired. I hate where we are in this world. I hate it. We look at people when we create music and entertainment and sports, and we look at our bodies, and that's our genius, and we say, wow, the Black body is just phenomenal, the skills, the things that it can do, right, all of that. But what does that mean for the collective? Somebody else has thought on a higher level to how to take all the things that we can do and put it in their system. Everything is systems. The NBA, the NFL, freaking the hip-hop music, every single thing, TV, acting, everything is a system set up by somebody else. And we're always the actors, the pawns, the participants of someone else's system, never the creators of the system. Never. Or sometimes we are the creators of the system, and then we either sell it or it gets stolen from us or something like that. But we can't even let that scare us away anymore. That can't be an excuse anymore. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if we get knocked down 100 times. It does not matter. We can never give up. We can never stop. Because to stop means we die. That's really what it means. And I'm not ready to die yet. And I'm definitely not trying to die before I fortify my kids and give them a leg up in this world so that they can go out there, be good for themselves, and be in a position to help someone else. That's the purpose of life. That is the purpose. We are symbiotic organisms. We are social animals, social creatures. We're not meant to operate in a vacuum. We're meant to work and mingle, especially us. Other people, their culture is their culture. Us? No, we are definitely meant to work with one another. We just have to relearn how It was beaten out of us. It was stolen out of us. It was stripped out of us. It was tricked out of us. Brainwashed out of us. But we know it. We know it, and now we know where to look to see people who are doing it. So why can't we copy that? Or really copy it, but then teach it to the babies who have not yet developed any of the bad habits that we have. Because we have our, you know, time's gone on. A lot of us, like you said, we remember when crack came. A lot of us, we like, listen, you can say whatever you want, man. My uncle stole my VCR. I don't care. I ain't trusting nobody. I hear you. I hear you. Happened to me. TV and a VCR. But, hey, what are you going to do? So I am going to open the call for any questions or any comments anyone may have about the organization or just discussions in general. This is our second to last call for the year. We'll have another one next week, and then we will reconvene after the new year. So, you know, we're going to play it a little loose because I kind of like went over the time that I normally do the introduction. I got a little riled up there. But I think it needed to be said. So I'm going to put it in. And you can press *6 on your line if you want to jump in the queue. And if not, then I'm going to just start picking on people, unmuting their phones, and asking them what's going on. Hold on for a second, though. We have a few people come on that I don't have their names. Hold on. Caller from 440 area code. Your first name, please.
Valerie.
Oh, sister, you hung up and came back?
No, I didn't hang up.
Oh, so this is a different sister, Valerie. Okay, so can I have the initial of your last name, please?
G.
Valerie G. Okay, so we have another sister on as well then. Okay, so caller from, I see you, Brother Jeff, just give me a second. Caller from 617 area code, your first name, please. Caller from 617 area code, your first name, please. Hello, caller. Okay. Caller, if we can't get your first name, we're going to have to drop you from the call. Okay. Caller from... What is this? 925 area code. Your first name, please. 925-250. Your first name, please. Caller from 925-250. If it can't get your first name, we're going to have to drop you from the call.
Zay John.
I'm sorry, brother?
Zay John. Z-E-J-O-H-N.
Okay, brother, thank you. That's a very unique name. Okay, Zay John. Gotcha, brother. Thank you. 925, where is that, brother?
Hey, repeat where that, sorry. It's a little loud where I'm at.
I said 925. Where, Erica, where is that at in the country?
Antioch, California.
Oh, cool. That's what's up. All right, thank you, brother. Okay, so we have Brother Jeff and Brother Ben in the queue. Brother Jeff.
How you doing?
Yes, how you doing?
Great, great. It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure, man. What you're doing here is magnificent. I really do. This is a blessing. I guess mainly what I get, I don't really have a question. I just want to just touch on some things like what you've been saying, you know, because like you say, this is making me sick too to what the things that us you know, Black Africans or whatever you want to call us, or what we're going through, our people. I feel like that we need to be, we're going to have to be infected with something that will kill the old way that we do things. I think it's going to have to be a disease so bad that it kills the old us. And we're going to have to create a a way for us to be a new way. We got to kill the job and create the business. I feel like every time you come in contact with a black sister or brother, we're going to have to pass this on. Like you said, we don't have time, like you said, to create a manual or a Bible. We're going to do this on a day-to-day basis thing where we create it as we go along and make it a manual or a Bible for business. It's like, you know, we have to, like I said, we're going to have to infect ourselves to rid that old way and to come with this new way. And we have to kill jobs, and it's got to be business. Like you say, with the young people, we got to stop teaching them like they're teaching them in the whites. You know, the whites are teaching them job. No, it's business. And like you said, we lost all that along the way. Like I said, when I was a shorty, and the store is across the street, and the bar was owned by a black, family, or the cleaners was owned by a black family. The church is black, you know. But now that's all gone. Like you say, the dope game and all that stuff took over all that. It's just going. We have got to turn a job into a business, and that's just the bottom line of the whole thing. I think that's just going to be our manual and our Bible. And like I say, everybody coming in to act with. You just need to address them as, are you job or are you business? And you need to explain it and break it down. The difference. I'm just serious. Just the way it is. Are you job or are you business? I mean, like I say, because it's just like I'm tied into Ford Motor Company, just like the Lions are. The Lions are they're an organization, the Detroit Lions. This is my example. They're an organization. And they're terrible. They're horrible. They're the worst thing ever. I'm a part of the same. I have an organization. I'm a part of that I work for, but the organization that I work for, they're the business, and that's Ford Motor Company. The Lions are bad, and I feel like I'm bad because I'm working and I'm locked in a 9-hour day, 6-day-a-week job, and when I'm trying to create things on the side for business, for black business. But you know what I'm saying? It's like, as bad as the Lions are. And bad off as I am, the organization has been around 100 years. It doesn't matter how bad their team is. They always win because they're the business. They control the organization. They don't care. It doesn't matter if they lose. They still win at the end of the day, all day, every day. Ford is 100 years old, and they never lose. And that's pretty much all I got to say. So, like I say, I appreciate everything you're doing, man. It's a beautiful thing, and hey, I'm here. Because, like you say, I'm sick and I'm tired.
Thank you so much, brother. Well, are you a member yet or no?
Oh yes, yep. I'll join the 50 a month. Yep.
Yep. Thank you so much, brother. Yep. Appreciate your support.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
All right. Next we got Brother Ben in the queue. Brother Ben.
My bad, I was trying to take it off of mute. How you doing?
Peace, brother. How you doing?
All right. No, I was touching on something that you was talking about earlier as far as, like, we need to pick, like, one thing and, like, dominate that, I guess, one industry. You know, like, just say, for instance, like, hair or, you know, restaurant industry and whatnot. I did have an idea I wanted to touch up on that. My idea on that was, like, can we just say, for instance, how we got the local chapters and everything? How about each individual chapter take on an industry? And after they master that, switch it up. And just say, for instance, like, L.A. does restaurant industry for, like, 6 months. We get it going, and we take over in L.A. And then Dallas got, like, you know, the automotive or hair industry or whatnot. After that, switch it up. That way we're taking over multiple industries at one time.
Nah, it's 6 months. 6 months, you may not even have one restaurant off the ground working. When we talking about taking over one industry, we're gonna have to pretty much be like, this is the industry. This is what we teach our kids. It's gonna have to be a generation or two before we even learn the game.
Yeah,
because right now we have a lot of people that are different games, We have people so the brother was saying, like, you know, the jobs or whatever. When the people that have jobs that work in other industries, they have the know-how, they have the information, but they may only know how to do their specific job. They need to start having this mindset where it's like, listen, go in and start looking at the big picture. Look at how this whole thing operates so that we can start teaching that to our people. And so to have all the different chapters and have them go through it, now that's going to be a headache. I mean, that's not even going to happen like that. We would have to all collectively pick something, and then everyone would have to commit their time, energy, resources, and freaking firstborn, literally, or their nextborn or whatever it is, and be like, listen, you are going to learn this. And when the child learns that, they'll go up and they'll teach their kids, and the next thing you know, we will just become known for that. Like when the Mexicans started taking over, they came to this country, they was known for cutting the grass and doing every little other thing nobody wanted to do. That's what they were known for. They came and they did it. Now they own stores, restaurants, bakeries, freaking car lots and everything else because they have the financial base. And even while they're doing all of that, they're still sending $25 billion home to their family. So they have a formula or a system. I don't know what's going on with us, but we'll get it together, brother. I promise you. We're going to work on it. We're going to work real hard on it. I can tell you that. All right, brother?
All right. Got you.
All right. We got a live one tonight because we got quite a few people on the call, quite a few people in the queue. So when you are in the call, please be considerate of the next person behind you. Hold on. We have caller from 617 area code. Your first name, please. Caller from 617 area code.
Hi.
Caller.
Can you hear me?
Hey, how you doing? Yes, I can, finally.
Oh, sorry. No, it's my first time calling in.
Okay, and your first name, sister?
Nadege.
Oh, how do you spell that, sister?
N-A-D-E-G-E.
D-E-G-E. Okay, Nadege. Okay, thank you so much, sister. We just want to, you know who we are on the call with, all right?
Sure.
And if you have a question or anything, then you can press star 6 and get in the queue, all right?
Okay, no problem.
Yep. And Brother Leonard, you are live, brother.
How you doing, Brother Lou?
Salute to you, brother. Salute.
Thank you. And hello to everybody on the call. I just want to, again, commend you. And, yes, you were fired up, and I believe you fired up a lot of us. But what I wanted to tell you is the brother that called him 925, you might not know where Antioch is, but it's east of Oakland, so we're in the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
And the question that I had in terms of our unity, what things do you think that we need to do to become a collective unity and functioning culture? Because the thing that you're touching on is what we lack is cultural collectivity,
and
we understand that. Now, I wanted to share something with you that you spoke about, and I just want to kind of express that I did something similar. Right now I work with a brother up here. The restaurant is called, Southern Cafe. We have two of them. But before, mm-hmm. that's my skill set. I'm a restaurant operator. But before I was in SoCal, and I worked for Macaroni Grill. This brother was about to open up this restaurant in 2013. What he would do was fly me up to consult with him. Now, to consult, it's a lot of money. But I didn't charge him anything because the goal is to help us become a solidary unit and functioning on our own. So the things that you touched on earlier is what we have to do. I'm sure there's a lot of us on this skill set that probably have 15 to 20 years in our profession. And the other thing I wanted to touch on was that, as you mentioned before, that back in the day, you're absolutely correct, the respect that we had for our elders, the respect that we had in the community, and we were inventors. And as I said before, we once were a race of progressives. We were a progressive race of people. Now we're a reactive race. So we only react to something. So what we have to do is create that. But in order to really create something like that, as the brother said earlier, we might have to have a disease infected upon us. What I really feel is we have to see what the future really looks like coming in the coming years. So if we could have a documentary, or if there's some type of movie, a movie series showing what's going on today and what's going to happen in 50 years if we do not come together. Because at this point, we have to be scared to come together. This is not something that we're going to do naturally, because
right.
You wouldn't be having this call. You see the sense of urgency, and many of us on this call feel that way. And the third thing I wanted to say, yeah, I'm gonna be a member after I get off this call. The question I had is, I can pay for 1 year up front.
Okay.
That's what I wanted to know. The $10. That's all my budget is, the $10. But I wanted to pay 1 year in advance.
You can go to that link. It's on it. So you go to the website, you click the menu. It says make a one-time pledge, and then you can and it says other, and then you can pledge whatever amount.
Okay, but I want to be a silver member, though. That's good.
Yeah. You pledge it. Yeah, you do it at the you do it that, and then just send me the email. Well, I'll see what it is, and then I'll set up your membership for 1 year at the silver level.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you, brother. Appreciate your support. Sister Ma. So you said 925, right? Sister Ma is in 925. Hello, sister.
Hi. Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, Brother Lou, this call, they just get better and better. And like Brother Leonard said, you have fired up a lot of us. There are so many things that you said that my spirit just leaps in agreement with. And I, too, am going to be a member as soon as I get off the call. But I have a couple comments. Reacting to what you stated, and one of them was, you know, how we have to be selfless and look at the bigger picture and not look for a return, you know, immediately on our investment, or even a return specifically back to us in particular, but the investment is for our future, future generations. You know, it's really sad that we have this. I've found, because I was an entrepreneur for like 12 years consecutively, and I recently, just within the last year, went back to corporate America because our people mainly did not support, you know, we don't have the mindset to want to support each other. It's more of, in my experience, that it's the crab mentality, or we don't want to see each other or someone else achieve or get paid off of us. For some reason, there's that thing, like, I don't want to see you, you know, successful or more successful than I am. And even to the point where, so I'm a realtor, and I find that it's really only my people that always ask for a rebate or wanted me to share my commission with them. You know, I'll select you as my realtor if I can get a kickback, or if you can put, you know, pay for this or pay for that. And it's like, why do we do that to each other? And you mentioned we are such a giving and loving people. It's who we are, but we are to everybody but us. And I don't get that. It's like we are the opposite when it comes to dealing with each other. We want to get over or get a discount or get a hookup or get whatever we call it. In order to do business with each other, like, we have to bargain and beg for each other's business, and we don't dare go to another place, you know, another nationality, and say the same thing. We don't go into a bank, you know, owned by Jewish people and say, I'll take out my mortgage with you if you give me your commission. I mean, really?
Right.
You know?
Right.
I don't understand
what it is. It was like I said, it was beat out of us, stripped out of us, brainwashed out of us. I know that, but I'm telling you, the solution is the babies. Like, in my house, I go in on my kids when I see them doing stuff. So, like, in the morning time, they get up and they make breakfast. If they don't make breakfast for the other one, I'm like, what are you doing? What happened to teamwork? We're not operating by ourselves here. You get the bowl of cereal on a plate for your sister or for your brother. Get it on the table, and we're doing teamwork here. So you have to train them. We can't that every man for himself, all of that. We have to eliminate that. And the only way we're going to do that is with that selflessness. Those children, it's not even the children. It's the community at large. They need to see an example. That's what we're really trying to establish here. That's what this whole organization, we're trying to work together to establish something functional to show everybody else or show the rest of our brothers and sisters, look how a group of unrelated brothers and sisters can come together and do something for the benefit of us all. Even though we don't know you, we love you, and we're doing it. They need examples. You know how people... Our people think they in their hearts or whatever, they're like, yeah, you know, I'm a trendsetter, I'm this, that, and the third. But as soon as we see something that's cool, you know, we jump on the bandwagon. So we got to start using those little loopholes and all those other things that people do to us. We got to start looking at those little psychological tweaks, things that people have taken advantage. We got to do that, but we got to use it for our benefit. We got to use it for our benefit. So it's really just the babies. You know, you got to train a baby.
Okay. I agree. And I wanted to add one more point about that. When we start owning businesses in the communities and being that example, it seems like initially what we have to do is, like you said, use the game and do what they do, but even to a higher level where we basically own it, but we have other people out front. We hire them to work for us so that people don't even know that we own it until it's too late, until they've already become, you know, customers or, like, dedicated or whatever, and really enjoy the service. And that's even, unfortunately, I feel like that has to be done more so for us to even shop at that place. You know what I mean? To patronize and to become a regular.
I think we were talking about something like that, and I'm not sure if it was on the call we had Tuesday or if it was another call. Right, so because you can't let our people know. But, no, you know what? You know what the solution to that
horrible.
Is? Listen, think about this. Here's the solution. People are well-dressed in their uniform. So you go into the store, it's clean, it's well-lit, and the people are wearing uniforms. When we walk into places like McDonald's and things like that, we're not accustomed to asking for the hookup and things like that. You're accustomed to going in there, making your transaction. They're charging you some weird, you know, you're picking up a juice for like, you know, $1.17, and then they're charging tax on that. But you're used to buying a juice, giving them $2 and getting back some weird denomination and change. That's because we are we're conditioned as consumers. So if we were to go and start, let's say, start creating like these 7-Eleven type businesses or whatever, just having our people looking presented well, wearing uniform, I believe that should be enough for our people to come in and, you know, start acting right. And then when they see something ran like that, I don't even think they would question, you know, who's running it. They probably wouldn't even think. Oh, no, a black dude can't be running that. So it's just something like that, you know. All right.
So I just think the bottom line is our, you know, the psychological conditioning, we really have a lot of unbrainwashing to do. We really need to, you know, our mindset is just ridiculous, I feel, as a whole, as a people. But I appreciate you and what you're doing, and I'm so glad that there are like-minded people, and I invite people into the call every week, and hopefully we'll get to that million people soon.
I see a lot of 925s tonight. I was like, wow. So if you're the ones having them on the call, thank you so much, sister. Appreciate
it. You're welcome.
Okay, that's what's up. All right. Next we have Sister Valerie. Sister Valerie?
Hello, how are you?
Peace, sister. How you doing?
I'm doing good. This is my first time on the actual call. Actually, everybody would probably be surprised. I'm calling in from Omaha, Nebraska. So I'm sure a lot of people, folks on here are like, what black people live in Omaha, Nebraska? It's quite a few of us, actually, to be honest. But, yeah, there's plenty. Trust me. There's a lot. I got teased about that for a long time because I was in the military, and I always got teased, like, what black people are in Nebraska all the time. We must wear coveralls because we're the Cornhusker state. So I got a lot of those jokes. But I'm riled up. I understand exactly what you said. Always thinking of different ways. I mean, I've been riled up in the past. I worked for the newspaper years ago, probably about 5 or 6 years ago before it started plateauing downward. But I think it was I got a little frustrated when I picked up the newspaper, and I worked in the advertising department. And all I saw on the front of the paper, we did a story in regards to the foster care system. And only faces that I saw were our faces on there. And I just couldn't let that ride no longer. So I went on ahead and took that opportunity to take those classes. I said if I could save a couple or however many I could save in my time of trying to do that, I would do my best to do what I needed to do. So I did for 10 years.
That spirit is in us. Look at that.
Yeah.
That spirit is in us. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I took in, I did 10 years. I did it nonstop each time. I started out with what we call Lutheran Family Services, and then it, a couple of the people, of course, it was mainly white people that I dealt with that was in position of these caseworkers and stuff like that. But I didn't want that to deter me from what I was trying to do to continue to keep the families together, because we see so many of us are broken apart, and that's not good. I mean, I am a single mother. So, you know, what you were saying in regards to how it is, I am a single, so I am the mother and the father. And I have two children. And for myself, I discussed it. My oldest one at the time, he was about 8 years old, about going on 9. So that was my son. And my daughter at the time, she was a little bit younger, so she probably was about 3. So I discussed it with him what we were actually going to do and how we were going to affect someone else's family. So I wanted to make sure that he was comfortable with that and on board. So we did do that. The first child that I brought into my house, Hode, was actually a 14-year-old young lady. She was African American, and she had a baby. And that was my first.
When she was 14, she had a baby?
She was 14, yes. She did have a baby. He was 8 months when he came to me. Her mother and the situation here, you know, her mother was older than I was. And I am 47 at this time, and she was older than I. So it felt like I had a mother figure, and I'm taking care of the mother figure's, you know, daughter, because like you explained, you know, that whole thing about our parents taught us, for those who were actually taught to respect our elders, I still respected her, even though she had a situation that she needed to get herself together in order for the children to come back home. But I didn't scold her because I still kept that respect that she was my elder, you know, even though she was going through something, but I didn't feel that that was my place to downgrade her as an elder to say, hey, you know, you could do better. We would kind of talk about things, you know, and see if she could come up with a solution, or I'll say, you know, maybe that wasn't the right way that we should have gone about that, and maybe we can come up with better plans. But, you know, my whole thing is each one of us, we have to see what do we really want to do. You know, it's the same golden rule, like if we went out and said we're going to get the lottery ticket and we hit, what do you actually want to do? In my mindset, I still to this day still want to try. I don't really know exactly, you know, how we hear about charter schools and whether the charter schools are not good for you, your kids, and stuff like that. My children, they don't go to public school. And the reason why here in the state of Nebraska, the education is horrible. I went to Catholic school when I was little. Then I went to public school. So I have both. Both of my children went to private school. That's because I decided, and I would tell anybody, I decided to suffer and give to my children first. So that meant that I couldn't get a new car every year, or I couldn't do this, but I gave to their education. So like I said, I'm a single parent. I have a child now. He will be 22 in the 2 days after Christmas, and I brought him up to be a strong black male, and he's going to be a chemical engineer. We do not have many, as we already know. A lot of our children are not going into these professions that we need more of us to be in. I am happy. That was something he told me he wanted to do when he was 5. He kept to that. I made sure, as a parent, and these are some of the things that we have to do. Everything is a village, and we all know this. But in order to better ourselves and better our children, I feel that we need to listen to hear what do our children need. And if they say they want to be this, we need to go out and try and find avenues. Now, how can I get this child to that point? I mean, I searched high and low, whatever it took. If I had to take a low-paying job, yes, I did, to get extra grants and help for my son, I took the bitter end. I suffered however I needed to do in order to get him where he is today. And he's graduating. My son is still a straight-A student through the beginning of his freshman year to his senior year in chemical engineering. He is the only black child at the University of Nebraska at Lincoln in that program. Of course, they weed you out, but he stood the test of time. So, you know, we did everything possible. I mean, I gave up a gallbladder. I needed to be at the hospital to get this child to a scholarship in order to get him the Jackie Robinson scholarship out of town to go to an interview. I could have died trying to get my child to Minnesota for an interview. But we have to be willing to take on the challenges and do more for the children. I mean, I did 10 years. I put all those kids back with their families, thank God. If it was a situation that they couldn't be back with that particular family, but they got adopted into a better family, I was happy for that. But they were in a family of somebody that was caring, not into a place where these people did not care for these children. And that's some of the things that we have to look at. I mean, I'm a wealth of knowledge, trust you me. I really want to become a member as well. I can't do as much, so I probably will be a $10 member at this time. But there is a wealth of knowledge, I'm sure, that can be shared on this phone of all these skills and things that we have done. I mean, the sister with the real estate, I understand exactly what she's talking about. We actually are landlords too. So, you know, real estate and stuff like that, my outer family, extended family members have done that. They have done their own construction. And then they also go out and get other people to do these jobs for them. But we have to keep this knowledge within ourselves. We need to figure out how we can. I'm also a cosmetologist licensed. I mean, I don't work in the salon anymore, but I'm also trying to figure out now how can we get that beauty supply house, how can we capture that and get that back in our community? Why is it that we have to buy hair from, you know, the Asians?
Right.
Why is that? You know, that's monopolizing all the people. Not that we all need hair in our head. If we just be happy with what we have and learn how to take care of it better, we will be happy within ourselves. But we have a wealth of knowledge. I mean, I know people that I went in the military with that have their own rigs. We need to learn people how they can start their own trucking business, like Warner Enterprises. There is a way that we can overcome. And just like you said, I think of the same thing that you thought of. Sometimes we can't be the ones to let them know that we're in control because they want to go ahead and figure out how they can monopolize and take the business away from us. So we almost have to have another undercover person, but some of us will still have to work there to make sure that we can keep tabs on what's going on. You know what I mean? So I do appreciate this phone.
Yeah,
I really do.
You do have a wealth of knowledge. We definitely welcome you, aboard. We look forward to you joining us. We have members calls. So it definitely would be cool to hear more about some of your experiences and some of the things you could bring to the organization.
Definitely. Right. Definitely. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you. Brother Phantom and then Sister Ashley.
Yes, hello?
Yes, brother.
Brother Lou?
Peace.
Yes, yes, sir. As the discussion was going, I was listening to the brother from out the Bay Area, Antioch it was.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about, and the sister was just talking, we have to change, get these kids, and you said the same thing, we have to get these kids' mind turned around. And I was just pulling out my mind, out my files, and I was reading a while ago about the era of Romanticism, when the French and the Germans began to love themselves again. It was a movement they had. So that's all we have to do is just give our kids a different vision. You have to fight fire with fire. Whether we have to create our own media companies on the web or some type of way, we have to give them a different vision. It can't be the same vision because they keep seeing this vision. They're going to keep going down the same street. They have to see a different vision to go down the different streets. That's how I feel. So, we just have to, a lot of black people come to Las Vegas, and this is a good place for us to sit down and eat and so, but we don't have, they have a Chinatown, a German town, a Japanese, all kind of towns. I never seen a little Africa here, somewhere where all the black people can sit in a nice place and just, whether it be Somalians upstairs cooking Somalian food, because we all got a part of Africa's diaspora in us, so we need to bring all that together like a big old gumbo and make that our business. Yeah. Just walk a different direction, because right now we walk in the direction they want us to walk. And they said they're 60 years through the Willie Lynch, they said they're 60 years ahead of us. So if we're thinking right now for the next day or two, we have to think 60 years or 70 years down the road how we want to see this thing to fall. Because I'm from California, and I was raised in California, so like in the 60s or 70s and 80s, it was, the majority was, I seen black people everywhere. We used to go to the parks and things like that, but now the Spanish is running out. So within 20 years, I seen them take over practically all of California, but they had created a movement, came from out of Mexico. So I'm like, because my wife, she's from Ethiopia. So my daughter, I'm from East Los Angeles, but my daughter has a footprint in Africa and she has one in America. So I'm like, these Europeans, they go back to, during the holidays, they're going back to France, Germany, wherever they come from, for that part of romanticism on, we did this, we feel good, we love ourselves, but we don't have nowhere to go but back down to those southern states where we got brought in on these boats. And that's like, internally with our blood is communicating. It's like, this is a bad place for us. This is no good memories. So that's all I'm saying. We just need a different view of what we're trying to get to.
All right, brother. Well, you know what? It's going to take some of us. It's going to take an investment, right? So we're going to have to find our brightest minds, our brightest cultural minds. And they're going to have to sit down and come up with a doctrine, something that corresponds with, the internal drum that our children are marching to, and things that correspond with, maybe things that we did in the past that worked out that were really effective. And then we have to modernize it. And then it has to become a doctrine, a book, a manual, maybe some type of, media or whatever it is. And we have to make sure that we get it in all of these black homes. That's the way that I'm envisioning what it is. It's like, okay, so you have a baby, you're black, here's the manual, boom. These are the things that this child should learn. These are the cultural edicts of, this is what it means to be black, and it's a new definition.
Because, I was raised in the 80s, in California drug scene, and, I went to prison and all these things, but I'm like, we can push the same... We can push this the same way that they pushing these drugs, push this thing so hard to where they're like, wow, everywhere we go, we seeing this. Okay, we can find this CD in the liquor store. We can find the book in the liquor store. We can find this at the smoke shop. We can find, they're everywhere,
Right, right. This just, match distribution. Yeah. I mean, the way that I'm thinking of it, though, it's like, you know, they don't even have to pay for it. It's like the Bible. Like, you don't even have to pay for a Bible. You can find one anywhere. It needs to be in our community like that, you know, something like that.
Exactly.
Okay. But, all right. Thank you, brother. I appreciate you chiming in.
Mm-hmm. Have a good day.
All right. Sister Ashley. We got Sister Ashley, brother Reggie, and Sister Maya in the queue. Sister Ashley.
Yes. Yes. My name is Ashley, Sister Ashley. I'm from Cincinnati, Ohio, and I completely understand what everyone is saying about building up the community. We need to be old school and networking and, you know, communicating with the children, the adults, and just the Black community, period, because you really don't really understand or realize how far that will go. I actually went to school in North Carolina, and I was speaking to different people at my school, and they literally knew things that I knew in my neighborhood from word of mouth. So it does go a long way. But what I really wanted to talk about, I know it was a brother on the call, and he was speaking about how we need to split things up. And I wanted to just put more emphasis on that. The reason being is because I do believe that we need to split the industries up on a major end of things. So if, for instance, I know someone was speaking about doing hair, whatever area that is, they can do, you know, they can have hair stores, they can create like an entire beauty line, you know, topical lotion, hair gels. I know they have some hair units out for men now that's throwing about, you know, creating wigs and actually specialize in that area, actually have schools that are specialized in that area. We're building up the community, the youth. We're building up, you know, people who are literally in that area, you know, as well. And we're actually building up that area. We're building up franchises, and we're getting in contact with different regions or areas and giving them, you know, giving them the formula to have a franchise in that area. And this is literally just for that area. And when I say just for that area, I'm speaking about you're specializing in, you know, whatever type of service or industry, you know, that you decide to specialize in. But while you're doing that, it's other people, you know, they might already have cosmetology backgrounds or something in the hair industry, cosmetology industry. They want to create something else for themselves. But, you know, for your location, is geared towards cosmetology. I actually wanted to talk about my background is in chemical engineering, and I have a lot of pharmaceutical, chemical, and biotechnological industry background. I have a lot of that experience. So I went to school in North Carolina, and in the Raleigh-Durham area, that's where the capital is, in that area, the triangular area, it's known for pharmaceutical, that industry. I literally was trying to move to Charlotte, but they don't have that many businesses or pharmaceutical plants down in that area. They actually are known more for plastics and bottles and containers. They have manufacturers for a whole different industry when it comes to manufacturing products. So it was like out of my realm as of being specific in that area. They had schools, you know, geared towards that industry and everything, while Raleigh had, you know, specific schools and trainings, 1 month, 2 month trainings that's specific, you know, to the pharmaceutical chemical area. And I thought that was really interesting because, you know, we you already know every location has certain, you know, every location has a hospital. It has, you know, a government. It has certain things to make the city what it is and what it needs, but at the same time, there's still specific areas that there's specific areas that are more specific or known to be the heart of whatever industry that area decides to build. I also want to touch on one other thing as well, a comment. So I don't know if you know this, but I do a lot of research, and I actually was looking into, before I even start into that, I want to let y'all know, we all are black, are from America, and it's us and it's white people, right? So, you know, white people, they have white people in every single industry. White people clearly is in every single industry for the most part here in America. And everybody else that's foreigners, they come here and they specialize in certain areas. But for us as black people, this is our home, so we definitely need to be, you know, we need to be touching in every single area because this is where we live. We want, you know, we want shoes. We need to have a shoe manufacturer, you know, a factory. Okay,
I think you're like missing what the point is, right? Because I see you're going, and we got quite a few people in the queue, and we only got 20 minutes left. When the brother, and this was on another call, when the brother said we need to pick an industry and dominate an industry,
that is
the thought. And so if you pick an industry and you dominate the industry, that doesn't mean you go and you try to open a restaurant and a shoe factory and a hair care place and a nail place and all of that. You pick one industry, trucking or whatever, and then you say, that's what we're focused on. And we want to become known for that industry. And the reason why we need to do that, is because dibbling and dabbling and everything else is what we are doing now, aside from sports and entertainment and all of that other stuff, where we excel, but we actually don't control anything. We need to pick one. So I hear what you're saying, and you're talking about individual places, but that's just not an effective strategy. It's not working because we have very little knowledge. We have little pockets of knowledge here, there, and everywhere. What we need to do is gain massive knowledge in one particular area and concentrate our areas in that thing and form something of a beachhead. So it's like, wow, it's really hard to break into this industry because they control the means of manufacturing and distribution and production and even the customer base. Like how it's hard to break into the beauty supply industry because the Asians have it bottled up. But listen, like I said, we have other people in the call. Other people in the queue, and this call is going to end shortly. So is there anything you want to end in summary?
Yes. So what I wanted to end in summary is just like white people, they have someone who built Walmart, and it's really no one who can – it's competitors, but it's no one who can top Walmart. There's Gucci. There's Nike. You know, it's other competitors, but these companies have been here for a long period of time, and they specialize in it, and everybody is knows that industry, and they love it, and it's nothing that anyone can do about that. So,
and so the way that we do that is we have to start somewhere, and we have to pick an industry. So let's be respectful of the other people in the queue and give them time. Thank you so much, sister.
Thanks.
Brother Reggie.
Hello, how you doing?
Peace, brother.
Hello, brothers and sisters, how you doing? Yeah, I just really wanted to kind of ask a question. I'm from my name is Reginald from Houston, Texas. The question that I have is, You know, I'm an entrepreneur. I have a barbershop. I'm looking to open up some more barbershops. And like you said, to franchise those barbershops out. But, you know, growing and scaling up, where are the funding sources to create these businesses? Where are the funding sources? Like, you know, I always look to the church as a system that's already there that we're not using. It's a system we're not even using because, like you said, if we grow Black Wallets Matter to a million people, then we could have this funding. But we already have a million people going to church every Sunday. And I'm just getting at that to say this. Instead of building these churches or within these churches, where are the credit unions that these churches should be extending out the funds to the community that they're in? I subscribe to Claude Anderson, the Powernomics system. And within that system, it kind of describes the nature of our society and how upside down and backwards it is because the first things we do is either run to a church to pray or march and sing or go to an institution and, you know, that ends up in $200,000 in debt or it's a backwards system. We don't start with the economics. We start with the crown jewel of, you know, making ourselves educated and getting this affluence.
Right. So that has to, but that's something that we learned, right? So I grew up in the church. You know, you go to school and you go to church. So what has to happen is it needs to become part of the culture where we are prioritizing economics, where we are prioritizing education and all of that. So that's something that has to be done on the collective level. That's not something, you know, one person. In regards to why the church is doing what they're doing, I never count anyone else's money. I don't know why they're doing that. That's a system that came about before I was born. That's a system that's going to be here after I'm gone. All I know is what we can do. So in terms of you, the sources of funding and things that you can do for yourself, what you have to do is make the model of your business, of your barbershop, you have to make that model, you have to design it where it's a good investment. So you have to say, okay, this is, I'm going to go in, I'm going to rent this kind of square foot of a business. This is how much foot traffic we're expecting. This is how many barbers I'm expecting. This is how many, you know, heads we're going to cut. This is what I'm projecting. Here's how much it's going to take for the investment. And now you need to go and find investors who are looking for a return on their investment based on the projections that you made.
Do you have those
projections? Do you have all those calculations and everything done?
Well, this is my first year. This is my first year in business. I've been in business probably 8 months. And what I'm saying is, like, once those things are in place, Regis, the huge hair company, is going to come by. It's not going to be black-owned anymore. Like, that's the point. Like, okay, I built this beautiful model, and then to who do I sell it to? I mean,
no, but it's not sell it. All right, so I'll tell you this. You haven't been in business long enough to be thinking about franchising. And see, this is why what I was trying to explain to the, you know, when I said we need to pick an industry and learn. Here's the sad truth, man. Our people need to learn to understand. We got to understand business. We don't understand business, man. And I just got to call it like I see it. We don't understand business. Money doesn't just flow out of nowhere because you want it or because you have an idea. And I'm not saying you specifically. I'm just talking about in general because there's a lot of people who think that I have an idea. Why can't I get money? You have to prove that the idea that you have is viable. It's a machine. That's what an investment is. You put a dollar in, that thing needs to spit out at least a dollar ten. You'll have people that if you can give someone 10% return on their money, you probably would have more money than you know what to do with. So a business or any other kind of investment, it's a machine. It's a machine that people put money in, and then at some time later, they hope to get more out. Now, what you should do with that money while it's in the machine is turn that into $1.25 or maybe $1.20. So you got $1.20, you keep 10 cents for yourself, and then you get 10 cents back to your investor. You know what's going to happen? Now you're going to have all these people trying to flood your machine with dollars, and you get to keep all these little 10 cents for yourself. And you, as the owner, the 10 cent may be your profit, and if you're really smart, you will build in a salary for yourself. So that way you get paid to make money. That is the essence of business. I can't even describe it no simpler than that. So by you being in business for 8 months with your barbershop, I have my barbershop for 20 years. I would not even dream of franchising a barbershop because barber cutting hair is a skill. I have never even thought about opening. I did think about opening another barbershop, but the headaches I went through opening that, and because you can't really systematize how to give someone the same good cut over and over and over, I was like, nah, I don't wanna do it. It's not a system. I want something that where I can guarantee the customer the same end result over and over, just like McDonald's does. I can go to McDonald's, get a Big Mac where you are, where I am, where Sister Ashley is, where Brother Cujo is, and the Big Mac is going to taste the same because they got the system. So if you're thinking of that in your shop, you need to figure out how you can standardize how people do certain haircuts. That means you got to have your barbers all cutting hair pretty much within, you know, 1 or 2% of a standard look. You got to come up additionally, you got to come up with additional revenue sources, because depending on where you are in the country, you may or may not be able to charge for the chair in your shop. So you probably have to collect the revenue. And if you have to collect the revenue, that means you need someone there sitting there taking the tickets or whatever it is, whatever system you use. So you got like, it's different challenges that you're going to face. But you have to, like, work the kinks out of your system. And once you have the kinks out of your system and you are successful, trust and believe me, if you go to ask your family and friends and you're living good and you say, listen, I'm going to open up more barbershops, they will be willing to give you money. If they do not, if you have your business, if you have your business plan mapped out and you have your current financials and your future financials, your projected, people will give you an investment. If that does not work, then what you will have to do is take all the money that you are making in your profitable business, and you're going to have to open it yourself. And when you create 3 and 4 different barbershops and learn all the problems and create a manual where you write down, this is what we do when we run out of Sanex. This is what we do when we run out of this. This is how we clean our blades. This is how we do this. You document that in a manual, and now you have an operations menu that will allow you to franchise that idea. All right? All right, we got a couple of more people in the queue, brother. Let me get to the call. Let me get to the – is there anything else you want to ask or add in summary?
I see a lot of people there was a lot of comments about like our culture here in America, our American culture, and I just wanted to point out one man brought up Henry Ford and how he never loses. And I read the book, and you mentioned about how the Jews – how they operate. He has a book. It's called The International Jew, The World's Foremost Problem. And it just kind of point out some of the, he kind of, it's like an expose. He's trying to expose the international Jew for what they are, what their aim is. And their aim is, you know, they've accomplished it, to take over media, to take over publishing, to take over these certain industries.
The banking industries and everything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's become almost a stereotype. You're a Jewish person, they got money, they're in banking, they're in media, they're in Hollywood. Like, and if we're going to fall into a stereotype, I think we should have the stereotype in our favor. If we are all going to subscribe to this one, we like, you know, whatever it is that our culture is.
Yep, exactly. All right, brother. Thank you for chiming in, man. Hope to see you on another call, brother. Hope you will consider becoming a member if you are not already, brother.
For
sure. We need entrepreneurs. We need people who are doing it. Plus, you know, we can get on a call and talk about cutting hair. I was on a phone talk with Brother Terrence the other day about fading and freaking using spray on hair and all that, giving dudes shape up. So.
Wow, all yeah. Right.
All right, brother. Hope have a good one.
Yes,
all right, so we got Brother Zajon, Brother Cujo, and Sister Maya in the queue. Brother Zajon.
How you doing?
Peace.
Good. You know, I heard a few people talk on here that I know, so I'm guessing I'm one of the younger ones on the call and probably around the same age as, you know, a lot of the kids that we may be referring to, you know what I'm saying? So I think I have a unique perspective on this, all these topics that came up, you know. As everybody was asking questions, you know, I put together a few notes on things that I think could, you know, are ways to fix some of these problems that came up. So is it fine if I kind of read off and summarize?
Go ahead, brother. Take it from the top.
Okay, so, you know, since I am very young and I do enjoy talking with, you know, older people and hearing their perspectives and what they know, I am aware of the social and psychological differences. So,
okay.
For example, you know, this struggle is not a quick fix. As we all know, slavery only ended around 152 years ago. So that right there itself speaks a lot because it lasted well over that amount of time. You know, that's a big mental encoding in there that's hard to tackle when you have these age differences. You know, the world these days is dominated by instant gratification. So social media right now is the most powerful way to reach and influence people. So, you know, since this mental attachment to social media increases, we must effectively use this power to its full potential. Like, for example, being mentors and leaders to people through social media, doing it freely and genuinely, like sending self-development quotes, free leadership and mentoring. One thing I decided to do yesterday, is start small with two people and start basically, I would say, in a way, using my leadership on them, sending them small habit challenges a day. So, and I'm already seeing, like, results in the mindset, the questions they're asking themselves, you know. So, and since we do have these age gaps, I know a lot of friends that I went to high school with, elementary with, or whatever. So a lot of close friends who are still stuck on certain mindsets, you know what I mean? And a lot of it is due to what they see on social media and hearing music. So if we all took advantage of this power of social media and personal branding, we could affect these people, like the mindsets, very, very well. So, for example, traditional business and retail, it's harder to influence people that way because when younger folk go into restaurants, they're not really trying to listen to what nobody say. They're with their friends. You know, the mindsets are different. The walls are up. So what we could do is use personal branding and start our online businesses, right? And make basically written out in our business model or business mission statement that we put a small percent of each sales into one of these black organizations, like save it up for the month and whatever sales, take out that small percentage so it won't hurt you, just in case if you're an entrepreneur won't hurt you in the way it's like if the sales are small 1 month, you know, so the percentages will help. And since value marketing is the key to making people care for you and even want to buy your products, personal branding is the key to their trust, because people's trust in traditional business like Walmart and this and that or this and that, it's just not as much there as personal brands, which they see on social media each day. You see people are so, like, attracted to these people. So what we can do, and I know I hear a lot of these people on here, everybody is very knowledgeable. Everybody is very, we all have great minds on us, and I appreciate being on this conference call and the people who told me about it. E-books. We all have a bunch to talk about. We could write free e-books and put them out for people to see on their own time. It's a lot of ego problems these days. And since there are ego problems, We can't act like it's not there. I'm young, and I'm not going to even try to tell my friends some stuff they want to hear. So I know they're not going to try to hear anybody else hear what they're trying to hear. So ebooks, they can see it on their own time and get value from it. You know, and that's people are learning a lot from that. You can even start young, children's book. We got to get a lot more on that, you know what I mean? And so with that leadership and mentoring that I was talking about, we can include reading each other's ebooks in the challenge. It's so, like, work on men with the challenges. You know, start with telling them to think of five things they're grateful for each morning. You know, get them used to thinking in a positive mindset, because being black, you know, certain struggles can come up, or you see things on TV to where you already feel like you lost. And I don't like even trying to talk to people about this stuff when they're in that mindset, because they're so focused on other things. And with these ebooks, we can read our own books out loud, or have somebody with a great voice say it for us and create audio books. So therefore, people who isn't that good at reading or don't have the discipline to read, they can listen to the audio books on car rides and stuff. And you can play it at double speed. So therefore, you can finish a book in less than 2 days. You know what I'm saying? And you can we can put out our podcasts on SoundCloud or iTunes easily. It's a bunch of apps to where you can just record. You can even voice memo record conversations or interviews with people. You know, if somebody has a camera, put up a background with interviews. But I see a lot of people do that, but the fact that we can do it by ourselves now these days, so many people can do it, you know, and it is a developmental thing. It takes time for this stuff. And we could a lot of more blogs need to be put out. I know Leonard Collins, who's on this call, his blog and site are Underground Railroad. It like inspired me a lot. I created mine, Art of Zoo, and it's going to be a self-development site. And I'm going to be talking about a lot of topics. And so on these sites, and when we're building up our following, we can advertise each other's businesses on it. And there's services that allow you to get paid on a per click basis, so that what's in it for me mentality is already like it's already eliminated, because they're getting paid per click to advertise our own businesses, and we can choose who we advertise. You know what I mean? And the business can choose how much they pay them. And so through the mentoring, and after a while, where this becomes like a more of a lifestyle, like my business model is a lifestyle of growth. When it becomes more of a lifestyle, we need to create like a rule to where our mindset, to where everyone creates mission statements with each other. Because these days everything is so misorganized. It's not the traditional tribe form when it's comes to the African American community. You know, it used to be you listen to grandma, you listen to auntie, a mama, a great grandma, great grandpas or something. But it's, you know, social media now. Everybody got phones, so their source of knowledge is coming from a device, you know, artificial light. So that way, when we write mission statements along with each other, like what's our personal goals, family goals, friend goals, organizational goals, and service goals, like for the black community, we can have a statement that harmonizes with each person's mental and social situation and tendencies, because everybody is different. But trying to approach it head on is sometimes hard, because there is ego problem, and we can't, like I said, we cannot ignore that. So, like, writing mission statements with each other, each person gets to state their goal. Each person gets to state their situation. Each person gets something out of it. So, well, you know, and there's a, you kind of like, you harmonize with each other. It's not like you have two separate goals and trying to talk about it like, okay, help me and I help you. And this y'all made the goal together. And, you know, I know back for a lot of y'all and a lot of us, when it hurt, when Martin Luther King was killed, Malcolm X was killed, all the figures, you know, were killed, a lot of people didn't know who to listen to. I know there was plenty more, but you know what I mean. It threw off there was certain balance in those things. Like, you know, and so creating these mission statements together, we start to think way more with the end in mind. You know what I'm saying? Because a lot of people, we got to realize we're going to have kids, and they're going to have kids, and they're going to have kids. stuff is going bad, but we black and we gonna survive. So it's like we gotta think with the end in mind to keep that in mind. So I would say my question, I didn't really have any other question, but like who's willing to take action now? You know what I'm saying? We could talk about everybody on the outside right now, but I feel like the bright minds in here is strong enough to create movements itself. We all should develop our blogs and do like that strategy I was talking about, a percentage of sales going to a black organization and advertise each other's blog on a pay-per-click basis. So we're keeping the business in the black community and online. The online presence is so strong, we could reach each other like it's the web. It's literally the web. You know what I'm saying? You all connected.
Nah, yeah. Listen, I'm feeling everything that you're saying. You're talking about leveraging technology. You're talking about using existing resources, and you're talking about using them in new and creative ways. Have you, by chance, been able to? So you were invited to this call, so you probably didn't get a chance to look at the blueprint. But when you get a chance, watch that blueprint video. We're essentially saying something similar. If you're in the younger demographic, then obviously you have no problem with technology. You embrace it. You live with it every day. Some of our older members may not embrace it to the degree where they feel that they can set up a blog and manage it and do all these other things that you're talking about, setting up the podcast. But the organization definitely wants to take advantage of technology, definitely take advantage of our proclivity for shopping and some of these other different avenues for monetization, which will allow people to contribute to the organization without it even costing them anything, without it even interfering with their daily habits and the things that they're doing. So, you definitely hit it
with
a key point, and those are some of the things that we that we are actually working towards. But I do like your final question, which is, who's ready to take action? I would love to, since you were referred, I guess, by Sister Mai, get the email, go on Black Wallets Matter and look at the Contact Us page and then just shoot me an email so we can continue building, because you sound like you have some technical experience, some technical proficiency, and that's really the kind of help that the organization needs right now. So if you and Brother Lenny, if you guys are slapping up blogs, most likely using WordPress or whatever it is, or something like that, and I would definitely, that's what we need right now to continue pushing the awareness and things of the organization. All right?
All right. Thank you. I appreciate that a lot. I am pretty good with the tech stuff, but it's like a lot of it is just books and stuff. So that's why I feel like more of us that read these books and write it on our own through our own perspective, social media marketing for blacks, for example, that would be very well. So, yeah, I'll definitely contact y'all and try to get it all together, because, a lot of more minds work better than one, because, like, I'm pretty good with the tech stuff, but there's people who know more in certain areas that I know. So, like, even getting my website up, I'm helping my auntie. She does user experience. I'm pretty cool with design, but, like, somebody at her knowledge, she knows, like, way more than I do at my time. So I'm trying to multiply my time, what I'm saying?
Okay. So she's a UI, UX, UX designer. That's good. That's something we could use, too, for an app that we want to develop. So, yeah, definitely hit me up. All right?
All right. Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, brother. Peace. Brother Cujo. And then we're going to end the call with Sister Mai, and then we're going to call it a night, ladies and gentlemen. Brother Cujo.
Hey, how's it going?
Peace, brother. How you doing?
I'm all good. The only thing I wanted to do today is offer an invitation to anybody that's in the Chicagoland area that has an interest in meeting on a local level. If any of our members or anybody that's interested in becoming a member wants to meet up on a local level to discuss the blueprint and some of the things that we're interested in and perhaps even a focus that we can take on a local level, more than happy to either arrange or facilitate a meeting where we can discuss these things on a local level. So anybody that does have interest in that direction, you can contact Brother Lou, and he will give you my direct line. Or also you can reach me on Facebook at Mansa M Power. That's M-A-N-S-A capital M Power. And just inbox me and let me know where you're coming from, and we can set up a time to meet. I'm usually available on the weekends, Friday or Saturday. And I just wanted to make that known for anybody that has interest. We can talk just to get together and discuss on a local level the direction that we're going with Black Wallets Matter, and also the ambassadorship program. If anybody has interest in that, we can discuss ways to actually formulate that and make that happen. And if we do, of course, we will be going over the guidelines for the ambassadorship program, and just have a conversation. I'll make sure that we have something to eat and we can have a good time together, and keep the focus on exactly what we're doing with the organization. So I just wanted to make that available to anybody in the Chicagoland area.
All right, good brother. I don't know if we have anyone from Chicago on now. I mean, we had a bunch of people on earlier, but, you know, it's getting late. So, I'll shoot out the email, though, to let people know, to the people that I know are in Chicago. All right.
Sounds good.
All right, brother. And
all right, bro.
Finally, we have Sister Mai.
Hello again, and thank you for taking my call.
First, let me just say thank you for inviting. So, yeah, the young brother, our brother Zayshon, he's a very, very bright young man. So that gives us hope for, you know, that those future generations, especially if they're thinking
right.
like that. And thinking in terms of creating, bridging that gap of communication with his, you know, with his organization, I mean, his age group and things like that. So that's definitely okay. Excellent. But go ahead, sister.
Right. So, well, that's one of the things I wanted to comment on after he spoke. He's like a son to us. I'm so proud of him. He actually works for Leonard. And so, Sejan, thank you for speaking up, and you have some wonderful ideas. I wanted to mention, because you often say, you know, go to the website, look at the video to people who are newcomers on the call, and a lot of people are being invited by us just by text and not going to the site. And I was wondering, do you purposely not actually give out the site often on this call, or say exactly where to go? Because I went on while we were on the call, and I went to just blackwalletsmatter.com, and which is another question I have. Wanted to know if that's related, because that one seems to be just the sales and merchandise of gear that they
buy. It's blackwalletsmatter.org. Blackwalletsmatter.org.
Okay.
We're not related with that site. Actually, I saw that site recently. Right.
Okay.
So, but the main reason is because if you are on the call, you had to have received an email notification. We don't broadcast it on social media, so we used to do that. We used to put the notifications on Facebook, but we don't even do that. So if you're on the email list, the only way you do that is if you came through the website. So we assume that we are talking mainly amongst each other, or people who are familiar with the site. Because the link is in the email. If you're telling someone about it, like, all right, well, go check this out. But yeah, I guess
that's
something we need to do.
That's not always the case. I don't usually remember. I have so many calls going on throughout the week that I have an alarm set on my phone now to remind me of, you know, upcoming calls. And it only goes out, I mean, it only alerts me, like, between 15 to 20 minutes before, you know, each call that I have to get on. And at that point, all I do is text out the phone number and say, get on this call if you can in 20 minutes. Or, you know what I mean?
Okay,
I don't have the site to, like, do that, and they don't have time. Even if if I had the site on that email, they don't have time to go through it and read it and look at the video and all that before I'm telling them to get on the call. You know what I mean? So
I think
it's a good idea to maybe mention that on the call to actually say what the site is. I went to .com and I was like, okay, is this a part of it? Is this a way to get revenue as well, you know, in addition to the membership?
That's someone who's trying to, I guess, like piggyback on what we've established. So it's,
right.
Yeah, it's, yeah. Okay. But you can,
okay, well, thank you.
Yeah. And you can, I'm texting you the website now.
Okay, thanks.
All
and
right.
then, one more thing. We are interested in the ambassadorship, too, actually starting that out here. We have an organization called BLAT, Black Bridges Achieving Tribal Thinking, but we want to consolidate, and that's what we're trying to do. We're affiliated with a bunch of other different, you know, black organizations, and we are really trying to bring everybody together. That's why we have, you know, other people, different people on the call every week, because they're from other organizations that we're a part of. We really are trying to consolidate and put, you know, get all of us together who are like-minded into one big organization. So we will definitely be talking to you about ambassadorship as well.
Okay, so if you're texting everyone, so you are you a member? You are a member?
As soon as
because
we hang
you
up,
can go. Okay.
That's
so you
earlier.
So you can go. You can so when you become a member, you can look. Depends on if you use your computer or your phone. You can look at the guidelines, the general guidelines there. But we just had a meeting about the. We just had a meeting about the ambassadorship program Tuesday, and we spoke about it. And that recording should be uploaded over the weekend.
Perfect.
And then you can like go over that and listen to some of the developments with that program. All right.
Okay. So I'm going to kick this link you just gave me. Sign up to become a member, and then I'll have access to the recording.
You'll have access to the record. Yeah, well, the recording that we just did Tuesday won't be posted until
it's not gonna be uploaded
right until the weekend. But you can download the guidelines for the ambassadorship program.
Okay.
So you'll be able to see exactly what we're talking about and how we have it structured.
Perfect.
All right.
Thank you again,
okay,
Brother
Lou. Yep, no problem. Thank you so much, sister. All right.
All right, ladies and gentlemen,
that concludes this town hall meeting. I want to thank everyone for coming on the call this evening. And again, if you are a guest and this is your first time and you like anything that you have heard tonight, we want to invite you to become a member. You can visit blackwalletsmatter.org. You can click the menu button, and there is a link there to either make a one-time contribution or you can become a member at the monthly level, $10, $25, or $50. Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen, and have a good night.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
I love you.